Hey, everybody. Thank you so much for joining us today. I got Maurizio Tangari, the founder of Human Fit Project. Once again, dude, we've been doing this every week for the last 4 weeks, 5 weeks. This is awesome. And joining us today, we have Coach Sawyer Says, Czech practitioner, Paul Czech practitioner, and George. Remind me how you say your last name?
Shemagin.
Shemagin. George from...
You're never going to get it right. I've been trying for years. Shanigan, I don't know.
Shemagin. George is the owner of Tiger ATX, a gym in Austin, Texas. I met George for the first time at Maui Fit. That's where we first started. Met Maurizio at Maui Fit. And when we were hanging out in Maui Fit, I think the two-day seminar was already over. And then my wife and I, we drove to a beach 40 minutes away in Paella. I didn't communicate with Maurizio or George whatsoever, and we were on this secluded beach, and then out of nowhere, this tall Italian guy shows up, and down the stretch of the beach, I see this guy. I'm like, is that Maurizio? There's no way that's Maurizio. And of course, it was Maurizio.
I was naked. I had to put my trunk quick because it's a nude beach. That one.
Was it?
Yeah, it was.
Listen, Maurizio, not every beach in the United States is a nude beach. I know it's different than Italy.
We don't care in Italy. We just undress whenever we have the opportunity.
But I was so flabbergasted. I'm like, what? How has that happened? Right? Like how? Like that's a random kind of thing that happened where Maurizio shows up, George is there, and then you're there with another dude from Chicago. I started connecting with here. His name is Derek, the yoga teacher.
Yeah.
We had a little workout on the beach doing some landmine with some logs, and it was really fun. And that was how we connected. And it was really cool. So, the first question I have, Alyssa, and this is specifically for you, was that a random moment, or was that some sort of synchronicity happening, or what are your thoughts on that? Was that something random? Does randomness exist? What are your thoughts about something like that kind of being pulled, like reality pulling it, that situation together, and everybody kind of just hung out there without any plans? What are your thoughts about that?
Yeah, I don't think randomness exists. I feel like it can exist when, depending on the certain level of consciousness that we're existing at. So if we are existing, let's say, at the consciousness of pride, where we're just kind of thinking about ourselves and nobody else really, and we kind of have this high horse mentality, then maybe that sense of that was really random and that didn't really make sense and that didn't really fit will kind of fit into that level of consciousness. However, I do think that everything happens for a reason. I think we're faced with certain moments and certain people for a reason. And if we I think if anyone takes that and retrospects on their entire life and looks at really, and maybe just looks at the really pivotal moments where we have big memories of, and we can kind of see that that was all kind of orchestrated rather organically. I met him very organically and randomly. And it's just I think that happens in all, especially really big, important, pivotal moments of our life. But I think it happens on a day-to-day basis, down to things that we probably won't want to think about as that was kind of meant to happen, or I somewhat created that, down to car accidents and injuries and anything of that sort. I think we'll face moments to, allow us to face ourselves.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, but it was an interesting little day. I had an amazing time, and it just kind of fostered the relationship and started growing a little bit more. And next thing you know, we're all hanging out in Italy, and then I get to meet you, Alyssa. And the first time that I met you, we were all in this, this little area, this little room in Maurizio's Airbnb. And you were like, no, we don't shake hands. We give hugs. So the second I heard your voice, and then you're like, oh, give me a hug. Let's go. It started the family element that Vieste was. So let's start off by talking a little bit about our experience in Vieste, specifically with you guys, George and Alyssa. What were your thoughts about the entire thing? What was some of your experience like? What were the biggest takeaways that you took away from? Start with you, George, or Alyssa, take it away.
You gonna start with me? Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. It was really hard for me, actually. I had a rough flight out there. And like, I've never, you know, I had been, I traveled to Spain when I was like in middle school. And I think I had a cold or some sinus something before we left on the plane. And so by the time we got on the plane, I couldn't hear, nor could I breathe. So like the whole like start, and then we had a 5-hour drive from when we landed. And so I fell asleep on George in the car because he had to drive and it was a stick shift.
Yeah.
It was like the transition out there was really rough for me. And like me being out of my comfort zone is like actually very comfortable for me when I'm like, I have my home and I have my environment that I'm used to. And I kind of like see when I'm pushed like way outside of that to where I have nothing, like, and even in a place where I don't even speak the language, nor could I figure around on my own. I'm like facing a lot of my control mechanisms and a lot of my like, well, this feels really nice to me and this feels good. And now I'm like, you know, figuring all that out. So like, I didn't poop for like 3 days and like maybe four.
I think our friend Mark Wildman had that problem as well. He was offering me prunes every single day. Would you like a prune? Yeah. Prune?
Yeah. What was really funny though for me is that the day that I finally did go to the bathroom was when like I told George, I was like, I need to go away from working out all day. And I need to go somewhere in nature. So like, we hiked down this like the side of this canyon, which was like really actually kind of dangerous. Like if we sneezed, we could have like fallen down the cliff. And we went, and it was like this little tiny secret pebble beach area that like opened up to the whole ocean. And like on the way down in my brain, I was like, oh yeah, I'm definitely gonna poo. This is gonna be awesome. And so we get to the bottom, and it was like, oh. Because I was finally in a place where I'm like, oh, nature, like this is really nice.
That's hilarious.
It was really funny. And so I was definitely like facing a lot of moments for myself where I'm just like, okay, you can chill, like just breathe, you're going to be fine. And so it was really challenging for me in that way. I'm not used to traveling and being in places where I don't speak the language, and you know, or I couldn't be like by myself if I tried, kind of thing. Like if someone were to drop me in the middle of Italy, I'd be like, oh, I'm gonna go in that corner over there.
I will say like just from meeting you, I didn't sense any like discomfort or anything like that at all. Like you were just really positive and like embracing everybody. And when did you say that you started feeling like yourself again? Was it after that first poop?
Yeah, probably. And like and it's an interesting thing that I like observe about myself is that I can still be very uncomfortable and be myself still, because like everyone was
awesome. That's cool.
It would have been a different scenario if like the people were shit and I'm just like, oh no, I have nobody to talk to or relate to. But like everyone was super cool to be around and like, you know, relate to in certain ways. So and it was beautiful, you know, and the whole energy of everything was like everyone was there for the same purpose and reason and to come together. And
yeah.
So energy was still there too. So in that element, it was like it was a really cool training ground for me to like face the parts of myself that like make me uncomfortable, that I'm really rarely put in situations to face because I just don't do them often enough. So yeah, but I can still be me and on the inside just be like, okay, this is cool. You're gonna do this. You're gonna poop soon. It's okay.
The next human fit, we're gonna ask around, you know, the first couple of days if they poop, you know, see how friendly they are accordingly, how much, you know, if they pooped already or not. that'll be an interesting like question there. Did you poop? Oh, that's why you're a bit like that.
If you have competitive people, like just have a poop chart and like, you know, we'll just have like,
oh yeah.
Number fours have you done, you know?
Well, when you are out of your element like that and your circadian rhythm is thrown off and then you're eating differently at different times and your sleep is off, your hydration is off, then your body's not functioning. Just it's not functioning normally or on your default programming that you're used to, you know, especially when that time zone is off. I mean, I have a hard time getting through jet lag. So what are your thoughts, Coach Sawyer, about like affecting yourself positively when it comes to jet lag? Like what's the first thing you do when you land in foreign territory that could really get you into just a normal sense? What do you think that might be?
Find clean water. and like don't like bring clean water on the plane kind of thing. I think hydration is the thing that people miss out on the most. That's the most essential. And like even with that, I don't forget about water for me. Like, and even with being hydrated and mineralized and all the things, like if we are stressed and tense in our mind, it's highly unlikely that your bowels are going to release, especially when you're in a new place. Because like we're not, I don't think we're meant to like travel that far that quickly across time zones. You know, like if we were to do that the natural way, it would take weeks and months to get that far, you know, to another land.
Yeah.
And so we travel that quickly and our body's under like immense amount of stress for not sleeping or being on an airplane, being exposed to all the electromagnetic activity that's involved with being on the airplane, all the new people. And it's like we had to sprint between our connections. So there's like making the connection. There's all the elements of travel that I think like we are unavoidable, really, if we're going to choose to do it. The, you know,
I mean, they also become practiced. They also become non-stressful for people that do this all the time.
Yeah.
So to be very clear, like the entire experience of Italy for me was the opposite. All I do is events. All I do is people. All I used to do is travel. Like I've driven in Europe before. All those things. So like it's fun. It's the full spectrum. But I don't think that as a society we should continue to only have this part of the conversation when it's like there are the other sides of it, and then hopefully we are as a whole like in the middle somewhere, I guess, of just experience. And what's the word I used to use for calluses, like where you don't want your callus so thick that you can't feel it anymore, but you do need a callus for certain
activities. Yeah, the right amount of resistance, right? I think that's like the conundrum of life through everything, whether it's work or workouts or eating or sleeping. It's like finding that appropriate balance so that you can be optimal, which is what everyone is subconsciously trying to do, I think. I mean, at least I've been way more aware of it as I've kind of built this business and trying to manage my time training people and being the manager and coming up with new ideas and implementing them and then trying to be a dad and then also have a personal life and be a good husband. Like, I think we're all just trying to find that the appropriate level of resistance and then monitor that with the appropriate level of balance and rest and recovery, the yin and yang of life, right?
Right.
And consistency and discipline.
Yeah.
Sure.
Consistency and discipline, I think, are the biggest ones. Like, if we can't be consistent and disciplined in our home life, then travel is going to like stress our system out immensely, or we have to do it in order to be happy. Like the people who have to go on vacation in order to feel centered and at peace again means their life is shit. Like like if you like, so if you're always craving vacation and adventure and something new and something fresh over and over again, it usually means that you're not resilient enough, you're not consistent enough, and you're not disciplined enough in your everyday life at home.
Retreats instead of goals.
Yeah, exactly. And so it's just like enjoying your life and being consistent and disciplined enough in your life so that vacation is like an opportunity to know yourself better and to have experiences versus like, oh, now I'm okay. Like now I'm going to hit the reset button on myself and then feel okay to get back to my really, you know, stressful life or life that doesn't nurture our individual happiness.
Mm-hmm. Using trips as psychedelics instead of downers, or you know, like
you got to be careful with the word trip there because it could be used as a couple different ways.
Yeah. It's a zinger, it's a double, it is a pun, entendre or whatever, like double entendre, but yeah, truly. But yeah, vacations, using them to escape or to like fulfill like the goal, like fulfillment of a goal instead of just like trying to fucking feel better for a couple days, man, until I
And then like when you come back, your shitty life is waiting for you right when you get off the plane. And it just makes the travel home that much worse, you know.
Immune system lower too, because it's like a lot of people get back from vacation and now they're sad again because they missed their vacation. So you just never, you know, it continues the loop, or we wish we had that life kind of thing, instead of like living your life like you're playing, or combining playing with working hard and really enjoying yourself. Like, I think we're used to saving that energy for vacation time or retreat time when we really ideally should be living that way.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's such a weird word. I mean, vacation. I mean, I never say vacation. Now that I'm thinking about it, I always say I need to travel.
Mm-hmm.
I never use the word vacation. I mean, I travel, for me, it's a trip, like, you know, you say, I mean, trip in the sense that, you know, just wandering around with no plan, meeting people, doing things, explore, and, you know, finding yourself if necessary. But mostly for me, it's like see what's around. It's not like a vacation from, I mean, I mean, vacation is from what you usually do from the routine, right?
Right.
For me, going out is like, I need to travel, I need to explore, I need to see what's around. You know, it's not just my reality, there's other stuff, you know, and then that's what I learned, and that's what I bring back, you know. And going back when you ask her, if you believe like in
synchronicities,
there is a sentence that always like follow me. I started traveling when I was 16, and I don't remember where I heard that, you know, but it was a long time ago. Someone told me, you are where you're supposed to be. And they always follow me everywhere I go. I mean, I never ask, I meet people in random. When I met you in that beach, that remote beach there, was not because, look who is. No, it's supposed to happen. You know what I'm saying? Supposed to happen because we supposed in some way grow this friendship and do things together,
yeah,
and then keep going, right? And they always say, hey, this is where I supposed to be, that's where he's supposed to be, and that's what it is, you know. There's no other way to put this, you know. That's what I like to say. And then when I travel with my wife, she's always impressed. I said, fuck, you always, wherever we go, you meet someone that they knows you, or they meet you before, or blah blah. It's crazy. It always been like this for my entire life during my trips. Is incredible.
Yeah, and same thing with me. I wonder if it's an Italian thing, huh?
Maybe, because we meet a lot of people. We talk to anyone.
My mother-in-law used to call me the mayor when I first started coming around my wife's family. Every time I go somewhere, hey, Danny, wait, I know you, daddy. Something like that. You know, something would happen like that all the time. But it's cool. Yeah, maybe like we're always right. We're always where we're supposed to be right when we're supposed to be there, you know? Yeah. And life is always kind of teaching you lessons. At least that's how I'm viewing reality now. It's like whatever situation I'm in, whatever people I'm meeting or business endeavors that pop up, it's a lesson. It's a major life lesson that reality is teaching you. And when you listen and when you pay attention closely and follow patterns and, you know, embody some of those patterns, like you start to realize, yeah, you're always right where you're supposed to be. And when the pain teacher shows up, and maybe Alyssa, you can talk a little bit about this too. When the pain teacher shows up or incoherent situations keep popping up, there's something in your own self that you need to kind of work on in order to have a more cohesive, coherent type of reality unfolding. So what are your thoughts about the pain teacher and when some of those uncomfortable situations start to arise, and how your reality starts to form? Talk to me a little bit about your experience with that.
Yeah, Dr. Pain is a good teacher. So like we have, so the Dr. Diet, Dr. Quiet, Dr. Happiness, and Dr. Movement. So when those guys are taken care of and we are meeting all of our needs in those areas, there is no need for the pain teacher. And most people are out of balance in at least one and sometimes all of those areas. And so the longer an area is out of balance, like if we don't move enough, eventually Dr. Pain is going to come. And at first I always say that, like, it's like a, excuse me, like you're missing something. And then eventually you get punched in the face, get some kind of debilitating injury or disease or whatever it might be. And it's all there to wake us up to what we're missing in our lives. Cause like we are mental, emotional, spiritual, and physical beings. And so if we neglect our physical body for long enough, our spirit is going to be like, you know, you're messing up here. Like you're missing the point. Like our body is the most valuable asset that we have. And it's the only vehicle that we have in this life that will be with us forever and ever and ever. And if we abuse it like overwork or underwork, then we lose privileges. Basically, it's like we get treated like children. Then you get put back in the timeout seat, and you're like, okay, well now it's time to look at yourself, and now it's time to take some personal action on oneself.
Totally. And like, it's a feedback system, right? Pain is like a feedback loop system where you're supposed to be paying attention to where and when you have pain and how often it shows up. And like, do you think it's a problem when people are on, let's say, certain kind of medications that are suppressing some of that feedback loop system that's going through, or appetite suppressant that you're completely denying some of the internal banter and chatter and information that's kind of flowing through you? What are your thoughts about some of, Western protocols and taking a pill to kind of subside those feedback loop systems, and how detrimental it can be long term, because we're never tuning into our levels of self-awareness. We're never getting deeper into understanding like what might be the root cause of some of these symptoms.
Yeah. And also, for the record, it's not just Western medicine. It's also weed. It's also mushrooms. It's also like whatever we're using to escape what we're currently experiencing. It's alcohol, it's food. Like, we use all of those things to medicate cell phones. Yeah, all the social media things. Like, we medicate and distract ourselves all the time, all day long. And it's like, if you are not you, unless you do a thing, like if you are not you, unless you take your pill, or you smoke your weed, or you do your microdose, or any of those things, then it's like, anytime we go outside of ourselves to look for something better than what we're able to access inside of ourselves, we start to lose ourselves in that.
Yeah, that's very powerful. That's a very powerful thing you just said, because I feel like most of us are being pulled in a direction of some sort of addiction, or something where we're tying our ego with a substance or a process or something to become the best version of ourselves. And yeah, you're right. It could be all those things. And I think sugar is a big one. Right now I'm like 9 days without any sugar, and I went through like a withdrawal for the first like 4, 5, 6 days. It's very hard. I was very irritable and just kind of emotional, and it was weird. But after a little while, you start to come back to reality and get this sense of clarity. And like, when I start to reintroduce carbs again, I'll have a better understanding of like how sensitive I am to certain things. Right now it's just straight meat, and I'm doing raw dairy as well. But like, you start to sense a little bit more like what you might be more, sensitive to, right? So what are your thoughts about eliminating some of these things completely, cold turkey, like the phone or nicotine or weed to reset, or specific foods to reset? Do you think those systems and protocols are appropriate for a set of time, or what are your thoughts about that?
You have something to say, George?
Oh, no, I was just going to bring up addictions, or try to put a feather in the cap or whatever it is. Like, it's fine though when it's marathon running or triathlon running or CrossFit. Or
is it fine though? Because at some point, like, your body does start to break down, right?
Dude, yeah, I love bringing the topic up. Like it's fine when it's
sarcastic.
Yeah, when it's socially responsible or respectable to do such things, it's fine. But I've been dealing with the dilemma of like, what if? Or where's the amount? Is the 80-20 rule for addictions too, by the way? Like, can you moderate all this shit, by the way? Are you allowed to moderate illicit substances if they bring light and space to your life where otherwise you don't seem to have it, regardless of how old you are or how unable to do it sober? Like, is a little bit of weed that bad? Is it, obviously the addiction level is what kills people or hurts them. Mm-hmm. But like, the reintroduction of cannabis, in my life specifically, is like, gosh, I miss this guy, and she missed that guy. And a lot of people didn't even know that guy wasn't Stoner Bobby. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
What, Drunk Bobby from the Friends episode. You remember that?
Yeah. Fun Bobby.
Turned out it was Drunk Bobby.
But here's the problem with that, though, is that if we need something outside of ourselves to be fun or to be excitable or to enjoy life, then we're missing something. Like,
it's, or you're doing the wrong thing.
Or you're doing the wrong thing. Like, so it's kind of like the vacation thing. It's like any of that stuff. Like, you know, I think you and Maurizio both are like, if someone took working out away from you guys, what would happen to you? Like, what would happen to your mind? What would happen to your body? Like, what would happen to your sleep? And it's not that working out is wrong. It's just like, are we truly in ourselves? Like, if we could be, if someone put you in a box and said, you cannot work out for a week, you can only meditate, spend time with your partner, and sleep and drink water, but you have to fast. Like, what would happen to your psyche? Like, what would be the things that you...
A vacation.
Well, vacation kind of, but like...
Kind of.
What I'm trying to get at is like, what are the things that we would be faced with in those moments? Like, I used to be a marathon runner. And when I decided to give that up, I was faced with all the parts of me, all my own personal inadequacies that I was like, well, who am I without this thing? Like, are people still going to see me? Am I still going to be liked? Am I still going to be respected? Like, is my body still going to be powerful enough to move me through life? So like, that's what I'm getting at. It's like, what are the things that we need to face inside of ourselves that our activities and our choices are covering up for us? It's not that we have to give everything up and, you know, be the monk on top of the mountain. Like, I don't dig that at all, because we lose connection. But it's just like, if we took all that away, what are we left with? Like, what is our ego then faced with?
Yeah, totally.
I mean, the thing is, those are, that doesn't affect the way people around us see us. I mean, nobody cares if I work out all the time. Right. You know, so if I don't work out for a week, nobody will notice, you know. Right. And but I think it's a good way, possibly. I mean, like I say, those are good addiction. They are good.
Mm.
We don't know, because they take away time from other things. Like you say, hey, look, if you don't do this, you can do that. Even reading is cool. Okay, people like read 10 books a day, whatever, right? But if you don't do this, maybe you can focus more, like you say, on your family, or maybe you can learn a new thing, like cooking, whatever, right? So there's always an outcome that can be very positive, right?
Right.
And that's the way I see things. I mean, saying what your question was, oh, if they take away working, I mean, when I go to Italy, basically that's what I'm doing, nothing. You know, when I go to Italy 2 months, you know, the amount of time I spend working out is more the amount of time I spend with my friend, my family, or enjoying like other things than working out. I think it's always like the level of balance, you know. Okay, if I don't have this, I can always shift towards this or that, right? You know, that's more important than what you do, because again, you know, nobody cares if you read like, you know, 2 books a day. It doesn't affect the people around. It's just you. It's just your thing. But if they take away, forcefully, they take away that from you, are you capable to shift towards something else? Or, you know what, it's not a big deal. I don't think there's a lot of people that can do that. I see a lot of people are drinking a lot, smoking a lot. If they take away, hey, man, slow down that. One thing I'm trying so hard lately for me is like being away from social media more time. I mean, I kind of realized there's something, you know, the New Year resolution things, if you want to call it that, but I'm trying so hard, because I figure out now there's like, and not because I post like video working out and things like that. It's more like this meme shit. Like this, like we have this group also with George and Ricardo, my other friend, the other group, where we share these stupid memes almost all day long. They're fun, but they're addicting. Yeah. They're stupid. But also it's like, you know, it's something that sometimes you say, oh, look at this thing, I have to share with my friend, you know. And I'm trying so hard to take away from that. And it's hard. I can understand how hard for some people is, like take away alcohol, or take away CrossFit, or take away things that so addicted to do it.
Yeah.
It's hard. But
working with some,
realize that.
I'm working with some customers who've had addictions, you know, let's say specifically alcohol, and they get to a point with alcohol that's so detrimental that they have to quit cold turkey, right? And then after that, they replace the alcohol addiction with something else just as hard. So something good like exercise, right? But if it takes place of the alcohol addiction and you're just doing constant exercise every single day, maybe twice a day, and you have this idea in your head that you want to be super jacked or really fit or whatever, on the other end of the coin, too much of anything will start to break you down, you know? And it's just like having, again, like we're talking about here, and it seems to be the theme, the healthy balance of whatever it is. Water can hydrate you and make you feel good, but it can also drown you and kill you. Fire keeps you warm, cooks your food, will also burn you and kill you. And I like to look at those two simple aspects as just like with anything, you know, if you want to have cigarettes or nicotine or weed, how much is that, you know, how much do you do, or, you know, whatever your default is, sitting on that line of too much versus not enough versus the right amount. It's like very, very difficult to gauge. And even with social media too, it's like engineered to keep us focused on that stuff. And, you know, we're all adults and we take a lot of health precautions. We're exercising regularly. We're drinking water. We're doing the inward work, the meditation, the contrast therapy, what have you. And that's a great balance. But like, how much is too much? And how much is too little, and all that. And then with the social media, like I was going to, it's like a kid, for example, who doesn't have their head on their shoulders stably, right? That they need all kinds of help from their parents and their family and their communities. How are they able to manage this style of addiction that's being engineered to keep everybody forced into that phone? You know, it's an interesting dilemma that we find ourselves in. Obviously, it's great because it connects us. We're all here, we're talking, we get to share memes with our friends all over the world, and that's awesome. But at the same time, like, we get another notification, it keeps us into the phone, and then we're next thing you know, we're endlessly scrolling. It could be detrimental. It could get to a point to where like the water's drowning us or the fire's burning us.
Exactly. You know, and it's like, I really like what Maurizio was saying, because like, to me, that is somebody who has life balance. Maurizio is like, well, I love working out and I do it all the time. And it's a regular habit of mine. I love it and it takes care of my body. But then when I go away, it's not a priority of mine because I'm doing something else. I'm expressing a different part of myself. And I think that is the most that is the easiest way to self-assess whether we are living in harmony with our true self or not. And like, and I think it's brilliant, you know, Maurizio, like watching you do that, because like not many people have that mindset, and maybe there's some cultural elements too, but I also think it's an individuation element. It's like when we are faced with giving up things that we're used to doing habitually, like, are we the same person? You know, like, one posture lifestyle all the way, all day long. Like, are you the same person whether you're working out or, you know, whether you're resting? Are you the same person when you smoke your weed, or are you totally different when you're not? Like, that is how we assess whether our habits in our life are true expressions of our self or not. And so I think that was a brilliant example that you gave.
Well, I think that those addiction, say alcohol, whatever, you know, you need to change the environment. If you don't change the environment, you know, the addiction is going to be there, going to be in your wall and things you see or whatever, you know, you touch and then memories or whatever. Changing the environment, in this case, the trip, you know, can be so easy to get rid of addiction and things. You know, if you bring person that, you know, used to drink, go to the bar, walk to the bar every day because it's a routine, and meet the same people and drinking, bring in the middle of the Amazon forest for a walk a week, I mean, you will completely forget about that. So I think it is this is so important for people. I mean, it'd be so simple, just, you know, having the same environment, the same people around doesn't help, you know, to get rid of addiction, you know. And I mean, going back, human fit, you know, whatever happened there, see, a lot of people give me feedback how they change, or they the personality, you know, they were different. They told me, say, hey man, you know, I was shy, or I was not always willing to do this kind of things, or, you know, they just like completely different. What happened to us, for instance, you know, we met in that beach there, was so important for so many reasons, because they kind of opened my mind of what I wanted for Human Fit. I wanted people not just working out. If you never met there, I never got a chance to know you better, or your wife, or the other guys that I was in the car with, like George, for instance, you know. Let's say we had a trip together a day, went around, we had so much fun and things like that. He was not stressed about like taking pictures all the time, you know. It's so different. That's why, you know, Human Fit, you know, that's what I want. People don't become there to just be addicted about, you know, whatever we're going to working out. But, you know, we're going to have a party. We're going to have this. We're going to go that. We're going to spend time around. And for me, you know, I can say at this, being blessed to meet George, meet you, Danny, meet you. I mean, it's just amazing because I feel like, you know, I want to share these people with other people I know. I mean, mm-hmm. always I do that. I always tell you that, hey, man, you got to interview this guy. This is so cool. You know, I met this guy. You know, I feel like if I keep for myself this person, I'm selfish. If I keep George or you, Alyssa, for myself, I'm being selfish. That's why I want it. Like, you know, you got to come. You got to meet these people. These are so cool. There's so much information to share. There's so much. That's why, you know, last time I went to Texas, you know, and I wanted to stay with you guys. I mean, I could go to a hotel, but I wanted to stay with you guys. I want to spend time with you guys, more time with you guys, because it's so important for me, like sharing and see you, like waking up in your house. George is there in underwear playing guitar. And she's making as amazing, like, you know, whatever she was doing, like those smoothie things in the morning, you know, whatever. It's just so much fun, you know, waking up.
Yeah.
It's like a waking up, you know, with the birds singing and waking up like in the middle of the freeway. It's so different, right? That's for me is getting away from addiction. I don't think when I'm there, like, you know, about being at the phone, I'm thinking about anything. Oh, I have to go to the gym. You know, no, I just want to enjoy this moment in time with people. I like it. You know,
yeah. That's and connect with everybody.
Connect better. You know, not just connected to social media or an environment that you used to. Like, oh, we go to seminar and then we talk about things about the seminar at the seminar. And we go, even if we go for the lunch break, we talk about the shit of the seminar. You know, but a Human Fit, you don't even, I mean, people, I didn't hear people talking about landmine when we were at dinner. Mm-hmm. I didn't talk to people talking about kettlebell snatch when we were doing this and that, you know, on the beach, right? You know, that's so cool because people completely, it's like 1 second when the workshop is over, they just want to do other things. They want to have fun.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
That's what it is.
I knew I was going to have fun at these events, right? I always anticipate or I think in my head, like, what's it going to be like? I always thought every time I go to an event, it's going to be fun. It's going to be cool. But I really didn't think that it would be like it was, like the connection with everybody and how fun that was and how impactful that was. I didn't anticipate like creating like deep connections so quickly. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it was so cool, like waking up when we went to my place and waking up and then George come down with Alyssa, come in the house, we have a little chat, we have coffee.
Have a little coffee.
Man, that was so much fun, right? You know, waking up in the morning, we're in the villa next door.
Yeah.
Coming down. I mean, it's so relaxed. Even think about, man, I'm here, I have to do this, I have to rush, go down, I have to do like 4 hours of landmine. Who cares? Right?
Yeah. Yeah, it's yeah.
True. And like, you know, George keeps saying like community, and it's like, it's community. And it's also the reconnection with our natural spirit, because like the
which
root,
community. That's my point.
It's
beyond connection. This is communing.
Right. Well, the root
coming together.
Mm-hmm, like the root cause of addiction is a disconnect from spirit.
Yeah.
So like when we feel connected from our own internal spirit and also like whatever spirit we believe to be around us in the moment, we go to a substance to find that spirit. That's why you get people who have to drink and then they can dance, but they can't dance if they don't have alcohol in their system. And so the alcohol gives them permission to reconnect with spirit again. And they're too running up against their own internal shame walls to connect with their spirit without the substance. And so like with everything that we're saying, it is like when you put people in these events with a bunch of like-minded people who are kind and loving and are there to play and have an experience, like we reconnect with spirit again. So therefore we don't, all of our addictions fall away because we don't need them anymore. We already have that piece of us fulfilled. So that then becomes the crux of transitioning that, of integrating that back into our home life and saying, well, where can I find spirit at home and still connect with community at home? So therefore we don't just pick up the addiction, you know, right when we get home again and we get sad again, or we forget how to dance again or play or whatever it might be.
Yeah, wonderful.
For me at least, a beautiful moment when, when we do this type of things, is also, is a good way for you to open up sometimes to people that you don't really know, but you feel that you can, right? They open the door for you, and you just
was like a sweet, sweet man.
He's like, yeah, when we
went out, don't talk about that, Elisa. That didn't happen.
I don't cry. I'm a tough Italian man.
Yeah, that was beautiful. That was good for me because I don't know how it happened. We just were sitting next to each other on the boat going to the island. And we start talking, and all of a sudden I start talking about my mom with them, which I never did with anyone. And I just felt like, you know, was the right moment, the right people to do that. And man, we start crying, the three of us. It was just crazy because it was so natural and so beautiful for me. And, doing it with people I love, I like it. And I saw them getting emotional in their way. It was great. It was good. And I need that. And you don't know where things just happen, you know? You don't know. Yeah. I have to go to the shrink and talk and cry. No, that was just happening in the moment, in the time, in the boat ride, and casually we start talking. And it was great. It was an amazing moment for me. And, you know, I want to just thank you guys for that.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of what's coming together on this conversation of these things that people do to feel better, to really go enjoy life, involve various people coming together. It always ends up with that. And it's like, Maritza is almost creating like these short-term temporary tribes, little teams, like, and for anywhere from 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 days, you know, a couple of weeks for some of the people that stayed late or early, like, you've created a small team, a tribe, and like, that's what people are getting. Like, yeah, you might go to the jungle and take drugs together, but you're together, you know, you're people that came together for a common cause, mm-hmm. common good. And it almost leads in greatly to my other thought I've been like holding in this whole time, is like, it's a great tagline for the episode. It's like a diversity of addiction. Like, you have to have a ton of addictions so that none of them are stronger than any of them.
Or change the word, though.
Fine, but yeah. That's what it is. You know, I don't have to change the word. I'm not trying to sell it. I know the truth in it, the power in what I'm saying. But yeah, sure, change the word. But yeah.
So what would you change? What would you change the word addiction to?
Yeah.
Well,
pastimes.
Things that you enjoy.
Yeah,
like,
things that you like to do to pass the time.
Well, because the word addiction, like, it's associated with a disease. It's like you either have addiction or you don't have addiction. I want to argue that we're all addicted, and it's just to varying degrees.
I want to disagree with that because of the way we're talking about an addiction. We're not necessarily all addicted to things. We are all expressing ourselves in different ways, per our own individual experience of life and how we see things. Like, and so I'm trying to think of something that I do like every single day, no matter what. I do have a big list. I dance every single day though, in the morning. It's either for like 5 minutes or 15 minutes or whatever it might be. And I wouldn't call that an addiction. Like, I'm still myself, whether I do it or I don't do it. And that's kind of how I would define one component of an addiction, mm-hmm. is like, does it change you? Does it bring you outside of yourself in a non self-affirming way.
And yeah, so like a ritual is a healing addiction, a well-intentioned addiction.
Sure. I mean, you could continue to use addiction.
Ritual.
A ritual. But yeah. A habit, a choice. Like
something. Beyond, no, it has mystical power. It has powers.
Yeah, yeah. A ritual.
It's not a habit.
Sure.
I'm trying to upscale it for you.
Yeah, yeah. Cool. Ritual. Like something that's a that's an expression of us that we choose to do. Mm. Like being in the gym on like an almost daily basis is something that is an expression of my own individual health, of my own individual choices, of the health of my body. Like it is my prayer to myself today and to myself in the future. I said rituals.
I know. Word. I'm giving that like depth. There's stereo audio here.
Now with something like dancing though, for example, like, yeah, would you say that there's like a physical like thing pulling you to dancing or emotional energy pulling you to the dancing? Like, I don't know. I'm not necessarily sure that like dancing is something that like, even without thinking about it, you go and do it. Like, or is it for you?
Well, it's also even like a, isn't it, correct me if I'm wrong, it's a hybrid of like Wing Chun or Tai Chi or whatever the other one that you
working like, in type of practice.
Probably like a working in sort of thing. Tai Chi.
Qigong. Yeah. Thank you. Excuse me.
Probably like a combination of all that, but it's not really to songs that anyone would think that they would normally want to dance to. It's to like some not wordless music. And I just kind of listened. I let the music move me.
Are you talking about the type of music that people used to dance to?
Yeah, sure.
Cool. Wordless music. Yeah, cool.
Awesome. And like letting my spirit and the spirit of the music kind of move me, because I use it. It's my form of meditation. It's my form of Tai Chi. It's me doing it my way, because I don't want to sit there and meditate. I don't want to, like, there's tons of different practices that I've tried over and over again. And for me, this is the one that I'll stick to and the one that stills my mind. Like I'm just in my body and feeling things. And that's just how I do it. And so like, I don't like to miss that. I don't like to not do it.
I remember when I bought myself a cup of coffee on my yoga mat, and it changed the way I did yoga. I was like, there's no fucking rule. I can't just, you know, have a cup of coffee on the floor and back. And it doesn't demote the yoga or, you know, make it less powerful. I have go-go juice while I'm warming up.
Yeah.
But there's another thing I think about. No, go ahead, Mauricio.
I think dancing and singing should be prescribed.
For sure.
I mean, I see, look at, you know, my daughter, she's 11, but you know, she always dancing around when there's music or singing, and not that she's a good dancer, a good singer, even me, but you know, if there is a song and then we dance together and then I dance like an idiot, I sing, you know, like an idiot sometimes. Yeah. I mean, it's beautiful. I think I remember like when it was fun, I went to this workshop once with the, you know, Venus Lau. I don't know if you heard about it, but he's a friend of mine. She's a great coach. And I went to their workshop once, and it was interesting because the first thing we did it, even without introduction of each other, usually we go workshop, you know, people say, oh, I am blah, blah, from blah, blah. She said, oh, we're going to put a song on and we're going to dance. It was weird, but it was so much fun because people loosen out right away in a goofy way. And some show his best moves. Some was very goofy or shy. And, you know, from that, you can see totally right away the personality of people. You can see right away the people dance or move or whatever they're doing. It is a form of interaction, right? Without talking. The language of the body, right? The
way definitely.
They want to show off the move, or the way they kind of stay in the corner, or the way like a little bit shy, or they see they want to do it, right? Yeah. It's amazing. I mean, I think it's something I would like to do with the next human feet and see, just like, let's put like, you know, music on. Let's blast for like 5 minutes and see what happens.
It's a great idea.
Like there was a good amount of, there was definitely a good amount of dancing and singing, I feel, in the time we spent together.
Oh, yeah, but not right away. You know, I remember that night we went to the farm. That was super fun, right?
Oh,
you know, we were dancing the YMCA stuff with the lady from the farm. She was kind of, you know, directing the line dance with Junior and Mallory, everybody. Yeah, but I'm saying right away without knowing each other is a kind of, you know, way to, okay, let's put on the dance floor. Let's see what's going on here.
But going back to the addiction thing, like, isn't there a physiological, psychological thing pulling you into sugar or nicotine or like alcohol?
Dopamine.
What were you saying?
Dopamine. It's your motivation. So dopamine is not a reward chemical. Like, we don't do a thing and then dopamine comes in. Like dopamine says, go do this thing. And so, like, you've got dopamine and testosterone. And if testosterone is low, and then we've got a dopamine system that says, you must go do this thing because quick pleasure, because we're starving on the inside in a way of, like, usually when we crave sugar, it's because, like, the mental emotional element of it is because we don't have enough sweetness in our life on a physiologic, there's not enough dancing, singing, sex, connection authentically in those ways. So we go to sugar or drugs. And then there's the, where was I going with that? Oh yeah. So then dopamine comes in and says, go do this thing so that way you can get fulfilled. But oh yeah, there's also fat. If we don't eat enough fat, then we also crave sugar. Mm-hmm. But dopamine pushes the button and says, go do the thing. And I've always gotten this thing of just like, you train your dopamine for your best interest. Like, people say going to the gym is hard or stopping eating sugar is hard. And it's just because we're undertrained. You haven't done it enough times. You haven't willed yourself to do it enough times to train your dopamine to say, oh, right, going to the gym is in my best interest, not sitting on the couch.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Retraining.
Yeah.
Re-addicting.
Yeah, no, I'm all in on that. I think that's an interesting way to think about it. It's just like, tell that to somebody who can't put the bottle of alcohol down, you know, or somebody that is nonstop eating candy or, you know, has a ton of grains in their diet or whatever and can't stop it, you know, and they're just like subconsciously moving to the pantry to find the next little fix. You know what I'm saying? So it's like a fine line. I love how we're talking about this because I think like the topic of addiction goes like, it goes super deep. Like, I find myself with the phone not having crazy amounts of problems. Like, I'm on it 2 to 3 hours a day, and sometimes it's 5. You know what I mean? And same thing with sugar. Now that I'm not on it for a little while, I think to myself, okay, well, I don't need it right now. But then when I do go back, like, how much is enough?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Right? And nicotine is a new one for me, too. I know we talked a little bit about this. It's like, okay, I like it. I don't need it all the time, but let's see how much I can take and have and that's beneficial for me without it being a problem. And then crossing the boundary line, oh wait, 6 zins a day, a couple of spliffs a day, does it turn into a problem? Is it hindering my performance? These are all individual questions that we all have to ask, you know? And like, why do you take on a new thing or, you know, whatever, you know, whatever, like, new thing that you start to take on because of whatever reason you're telling yourself. It's like, is it something that you're telling yourself that you need this, or is it something that you really want to do? Is it too much, too less? Like, these are all things individually we're all having to ask ourselves. And at the end of the day, is it having a negative impact on our performance? Is it having a negative impact on how we're being as a parent, as a lover, as a friend, or whatever, business owner, right?
Yeah. It's usually, so from what I've seen, the more extreme things get, because it's fun. We can weave in and out. Like, we can have a 20 lane road and here's where it's healthy for us in this 20 lane road. And we can weave all the way to the edge and do too much nicotine. And we can weave over here and maybe not exercise enough for a little while. And like, and we're fine until the pain center shows up. And then depending on how deep one is, like, you, like, I've seen a lot of people where they need a crisis. They need to face that death moment for them. Like, I had one client who for a few years where I was like, he was heavily drinking alcohol and not sleeping and not exercising and like not moving enough during the day and on the computer all the time and staying up late and like on his phone and not eating things that are good, like all the things. And like, and he was also seeing me during that time and he was lying about it until he found out he had a blockage in his carotid artery. And so he came in and he's like, I need you to reteach me everything that you've already taught me because I'm going to die if not. And like, that was his death moment of like, and he changed like 40 44, I think, was when he started his like change process. And now he's 45, about to be 46 really soon. And he revamped his entire body by doing all the basics and getting his mind right. Like basically saying, I don't want to die. So therefore I'm going to live in such a way that reflects not wanting to die. And also the dream of wanting, you know, to be healthy and his true self. So yeah. It's like, yeah.
As far as like getting your mind right when it comes to somebody like that, Paul Cech talks about when you have a dream big enough, you don't need a crisis. So was it switching his mindset into finding whatever his new dream or purpose is going to be? Like, how do you go about that?
Well, he was facing a nightmare. So sometimes with people, they don't know what their dream is, but they do know what their nightmare is. Like, most people, they can't come up with a dream, but if you're like, well, what's your worst nightmare for yourself? Mm. And what does that look like? They know what that is. Like, I would probably guesstimate that's 99% of people can tell you what their worst nightmare for their lives are. Mm. So once
that's deep.
Yeah. 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 We all know what we're afraid of. We just can't, sometimes we can't get past that to imagine a better way, like to imagine the good stuff.
Yeah.
So it's like, once we face that idea of death for ourselves, like where our body is deteriorating, or like we've gotten, you know, the door banged down, we can no longer ignore the things that we've been ignoring. So then at that point, it doesn't matter. It's just like, well, I don't want to die. Like, I don't want, you know, I don't want the stroke that comes from that blockage in my carotid artery, or I don't want the like Crohn's disease that's going to come from my persistent diarrhea eventually. Like, it can show up at the top or at the bottom. We then move away from that. We have to see what Dr. Diet, Dr. Happiness, Dr. Movement, Dr. Quiet, like what have we been ignoring and neglecting for ourselves? And then we edit that. And I think in that process, we can then start to come up with a dream. But some people don't know that answer. Like, and some people, their dream can be as simple as like, well, I would like to not have diarrhea ever again. You know, like I would like to have solid poos every single day for the rest of my life. Like, and that's a solid, that's a good dream. Like, that's a good 3-month goal. And then we like, okay, well, what do we have to do in that 3-month time for you to have solid poos every day? And then once you get that, then you can come up with something bigger. Like sometimes you just got
to baby steps.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
We started the conversation
we started talking about poo.
And now we're ending with poo. Guys, this has been a 60 minute conversation. This is like the fastest 60 minutes I've ever kind of been a part of. So, I do have to bounce. I have a 12:30 appointment here, 12:30 p.m. here in Chicago, Illinois. It's cold, it's snowy. I see that you guys got sun behind you. So I do have to bounce. This was a fantastic little conversation talking about addiction and vacation versus vocation versus purpose and community. I think we touched a ton on that and how important that is for just kind of building people up and, you know, finding ways to connect and having deeper connections and building these relationships. It's been a pleasure talking with you guys in the 60 minutes here, and also a real pleasure getting to know you guys in person and meeting you guys all over the world. And so I just want to thank you guys. So if anyone has any closing thoughts, now would be the time.
You're the man.
No problem.
Awesome. All right. We got Maurizio Tangari, HydroCore, Human Fit Project. We got George, the owner of Tiger Gym ATX, and Coach Alyssa Sawyer. Coach Sawyer says, thank you so much for your time today, everybody. All love.